You know, there's been cancer and cancer and concussions that wound up being vertebrae issues and concussions that were real and
neck injuries.
The thing that Letang went through.
It's called a stroke.
At some point, do we consult a witch doctor and try to figure out what's going on in Pittsburgh? Is that too insensitive? Have I made light of Pascal Dupuis' blood clot in his lung?
No, you got blasted for this on Twitter. Not that I'm surprised, but people, everybody.
You know what I'm in? Right,
just calm down.
I'll tell you what the problem is right now. I'm in an antagonistic rut right now.
Hang on. You know what? Hang on. Here's what everybody needs to do. Hold on. What? Let me turn this up. Let me know if you can put my microphone closest. This is a pretty low rent. Hang on. This is what everyone needs to do while we're having this conversation. It just makes everything better when you're having a very stressful day. You just need to put on something that's going to make you smile and just make you relax. You know what that is, Wish? You know what that is?
What's that?
The Commodores. Which is for... Hang on. Can you hear that? Is that okay?
I do.
Okay, let's just, for one second here, before we talk about Pascal Dupuis and all the injuries the Pittsburgh Penguins have had, let's listen to the Commodores. Hold on. Isn't that better?
You know, there's a large contingent of the audience right now that's wondering why you aren't playing the Faith No More version, I'm sure.
Because this is better.
What's in your mind when this plays? What's the Jeff Merrick vision of Nirvana that's happening right now in your
mind? I'll tell you, it was, I don't want to say...
Falling into a vat of broccoli.
Yeah, broccoli smothered in tamari sauce and nutritional yeast, as we talked about a couple of weeks on the podcast. No, you know what I think about when I hear this song?
What's that?
Originally, it was Lionel Richie and seeing him live. Then, when Faith No More dropped with this, it was Faith No More and Mike Patton. But you know what it is now for me?
What's that?
My life was changed. I think I mentioned this on the podcast a couple of years ago. My life was changed when I saw Mike Keenan sing the song.
Hold on.
In the makeup chair at Sportsnet. Right, you have not lived until you've heard Mike Keenan sing Easy by the Commodores. It's the best.
I think that I speak for the audience by saying, context, please.
The context was Mike is always humming. I worked with Mike for a couple of years before he bolted to the KHL. He did a lot of work with us at Sportsnet. Right. And the one thing you'll know about Mike, everyone thinks of Mike, Iron Mike, fierce, tough. And he is that guy, like when he coaches and when he talks about hockey. But when we're just sitting around the green room or getting makeup or whatever, Mike sings. Mike loves singing. Now, he's not a good singer, which to me makes it more charming. And one of my most vivid memories, this will live with me until the day I shed the mortal coil, is Mike Keenan sitting in the makeup chair singing Easy by the Commodores. Not whispering it or humming it under his breath. No, Wish, singing it, going for it. So everybody on the floor, like everyone in the control room, can hear Mike Keenan sing, I want to get high, so high, I want to be free, like all of it. It's awesome.
Well,
so that's what I think of when I hear Easy by the Commodores. I think of Mike Keenan.
On the one hand, it makes sense because he's probably pretty wound pretty tight, right? But on the other hand, I do have to note the irony in the greatest generator of stress outside of game sevens in professional hockey singing the song.
Well, you need a balance in life. You can't be that guy 25/7. Right?
That's
you do
true.
Need a little balance. You
that's why I try to balance whimsy with the last 24 hours of
okay, so now what's happening as... It's guitar solo time in the song here, so you just riff on what's going on in your life right now.
First off, I wasn't making light of Pascal Dupuis' injury by noting that the Penguins should have a show on the Surgery Channel because we're just noting how many injuries they've had and how freaky they've been. It's not making light of it. It's a shitty situation, and my heart goes out to him. He's somebody that I really like watch and play. He does all the little things right, and the Penguins are an exponentially better team with him in the lineup. He's a glue guy. We've talked about glue guys in the show, Jeff Merrick, and I would venture to say Pascal Dupuis is a glue guy.
Remember when the trade was made, the Hossa deal, and Dupuis was like the throw-in guy?
Yep.
Yeah, the throw-in guy turned into an awesome first-line hockey player for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep.
He was just, he's just going to be there to kill penalties. Not so fast. He turned into a pretty fantastic hockey player.
Angelo Esposito pumped my gas the other day. I'm kidding, of course. It's a terrible thing to say. But yeah, it's a tremendous loss. 6 months is the estimate. Blood clot in the lung could obviously be a life-threatening thing if things go sideways. And thoughts and prayers with Dupuy. That's just it has become a almost bi-weekly occurrence that you'll see one of the Penguins beat writers tweet out Penguins press conference at 1 o'clock, and you're just saying to yourself, it's either a big contract or a traumatic injury or ailment.
It's funny. I was working up this morning, and the note came in from the Pittsburgh Penguins, their press release, and I showed my trainer. I'm like, what do you think this is? He goes, someone's injured, and it's bad. And I said, what are you talking about? Because every time a Penguins press release comes out, someone's injured and it's bad. And you know what? Randy Smith, you were right.
Yeah.
Player's injured and it's bad. And this is this. I mean, we all think of Kimmo Tiimonen with something identical, and that's probably the career for Kimmo Tiimonen as well. And I don't think it would surprise anyone if this is it for Pascal Dupuy. Although, remember it's not the first time that it happened, but the first incident like this that I really followed and sort of started to understand what blood clots mean for a professional athlete in the NHL was Dmitry Yuskevich with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who was an absolute beast blocking shots and throwing his face in front of. Like, I loved Yuskevich. And then when he got the blood clot, I mean, he was prepared. This is how much of a gamer this guy was. He was prepared to sign a waiver, okay, basically saying that I do not hold the Maple Leafs responsible for anything that happens to me because of my injury. I just want to play. Can you imagine that for a second? I'm sure the Players Association wasn't exactly thrilled, but that was the first sort of blood clot issue that was really at the foreground for me in my covering of this game.
Wow.
But yeah, listen, man, speedy recovery. Thoughts and prayers to Pascal Dupuy and his family. It's terrible. And to your point, too, you're right. Like, listen, by the way, folks, you know, when there's a really bad situation or a negative situation in the world, the healthiest thing to do is treat it with humor. Honestly, and there's in a lot of ways no such thing as too soon.
You're
it's
just
okay.
saying that
it's
as
okay
a,
for Greg to say that, folks.
You're just saying
Let's
that as
all
a Gilbert,
just calm
a
down.
Gilbert Gottfried fan who listened to
that's
his
true
9/11
too. Well, that's true too. And when there's tragedy in my life, and there's tragedy in everybody's life, and the next time that it happens to me, it's okay to make a joke about it, because the sanest thing you can do in your life is have a sense of humor. And
hey, listen, not to get morbid here, but I've often said to people that I love, I said, listen, when I go, when the time comes, when I get called to that big Meadowlands parking lot after game 4 and 95 in the sky, I will, I want it to be a roast. I don't want it to be a solemn remembrance of my life. That's boring. And it's going to be disingenuous anyway. So I want it to be I've always said to people, I said, when my time comes, man, just have a party. Just do a good thing. Do it New Orleans style. Walk around with parasols.
Tell jokes.
Stuff. Like, I want it to not be a thing. Like, it wouldn't be properly remembering what I tried to do here and what my spirit was to do something solemnly. So if you're in the audience and you see my name on the sign outside the funeral home, just peek your head in and make sure that everyone's doing their part in making sure that things are light.
With like whoopee cushions and honka honka AM radio horns.
Yeah, and an open bar. And at one point, a system of levers and pulleys raises me from the coffin and scares everybody. That's all I'm asking.
Tell you, man, the funniest tune, actually, it was actually a footstone, not a tombstone, funniest footstone that I ever saw when I worked at Park Lawn Cemetery for those years that I was paying my way through university was this guy who had written on his stone above his name the dates that he was born and the dates that he died, in quotations, I told you I was sick. Mm. Like, come on, like, that is the greatest thing you can put on a tombstone. I told you I was sick. It's freaking hilarious. It's been aped a number of times, but I mean, that guy's got a sense of humor. That's what I think more of us should be. And you know what? When you're starting to get all worked up, just put on Easy by the Commodores and imagine Mike Keenan singing this with an apron over his neck while he gets makeup.
All right, listen. Hockey perspective for the Penguins.
All right.
Here's where I think this really makes a difference. I felt like at some point Johnston, and he had already sort of done it recently a bit, was going to reunite Dupuy, Kunitz, Crosby, drop Hornquist down to Malkin. I believe Hornquist will probably spend the rest of his season playing with Kunitz and Sidnow, which brings us back to the ultimate decision that Jim Rutherford's going to have to make, which is who do you bring in to play with Gino? Because that's what's going to have to happen at some point. I know Bo Bennett's going to always be the guy that they'd like to find out the answer internally if he could be that guy. But I think they have to go outside the organization. I think they have to go outside the organization to bring someone to play with Geno, especially now with this new challenge to their forward depth.
They want anyone on the Maple Leafs?
Well, I don't know. What's the asking price?
Well, let me just have a look down here.
The rights to speak to Dan Bylsma?
Might be. There's something funny I want to talk about the Maple Leafs. Remind me. I'm sure we're going to get to it when Dangle joins us a little bit later on. But something I want to point out a little bit later on about that game last night.
Big show today, by the way. Dave Andrews from the AHL is going to hop on to talk about 3-on-3. I have some amazing numbers to share with you about that when he comes on. We're going to have somebody on who we're a little worried about. We are going to have him on. We don't know if he's able to speak. We don't know if he is of his right mind. But Steve Dangle will join us later in the show after that monster rant. Probably the greatest single piece of video he's ever produced.
I haven't seen it yet. I know. Apparently this one is
goals.
Epic. This one is like Citizen Kane. This is
the
his
Predators
rosebud.
The Predators actually scored their 9th goal while he was cutting the video, which is pretty amazing.
Okay, let me just get to this now.
Yes, please.
Normally, I don't follow team Twitter feeds during games because generally they clog up my timelines. But did you see this last night? Something really interesting happened on the Toronto Maple Leafs timeline. Can you just go, Wish? You like when I take you through these exercises online while we do the podcast live. I want you to go to @MapleLeafs. On Twitter.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm there. They're verified, so it was easy to find them. Okay, now where should I go?
So let's go down to where it's Leafs trail 4-0 after 40 minutes. #TMLTalk.
Yes.
Okay.
TMLTalk,
so that's one tweet. And then later, third period underway. And then it's now 5-0 Nashville. Then TMLTalk update, retweeting Henny tweets, that's Paul Hendrick. It's a goal, 6-0 Nashville. And then what happens? Mm-hmm. They stop updating the score. Until Mike Santorelli scores. But then they don't say what the score is. By the way, if you're following along at home, at that point the score was 8-1, but they didn't update that it was 7-0, 8-0. All it says, Mike Santorelli scores for the Leafs. And then, they retweet someone saying Nazem Kadri snaps a 7-game goal streak, Leafs down 8-2. So the first reference you get to the fact that the Leafs have surrendered 8 is when Kadri snaps a 7-game goal streak. But it's almost as if someone in the Maple Leafs organization said, hey, look, Twitter, we're keeping score up till 6. And then after 6, stop saying how much the score is.
Here's my favorite thing about that Twitter feed last night. You know what it was? I mean, think about, like you said, the inanity of these Twitter feeds, of these team Twitter feeds. Like all the stuff they put out there, it all just kind of passes into the ether. Nobody pays attention to it. The tweet that reads, final, (9-2 Nashville, period, was retweeted 734 times.
Yeah. And favorited 547 times.
Yeah, I know.
Oh boy,
we'll get to the Leafs and Dangle later because I don't want to turn this into Leafs lunch. We usually could. Nona spoke today. Obviously, everybody's going crazy. I tried to put things in perspective earlier today by noting that the Devils and Leafs have played the same number of games. The Leafs are actually higher in the standings at this point than my team, which puts things in perspective for me. But hang on.
I mean, losing to the Buffalo Sabres, getting starched by the Preds, collectively losing 15-4 in the last two games.
No, I agree. But honestly, who's in a worse spot right now, Toronto or Dallas?
Toronto.
I don't agree. Toronto.
Oh, I don't know, man.
Toronto. Let me. Okay. I know Dangle's going to be on, and I should probably say this until we talk him off the ledge. Stop it, you guys. I mean, seriously, this is not going to be a team that all of a sudden is going to lose 9 in a row. They're just not. They're good. They're not great. They kind of suck sometimes, but they're completely average.
Okay.
They're completely average.
All things in this world, let me go Aristotelian here on you. All things in this world exist in two states. They exist in the state of actuality.
Liquid.
Or they exist in the state of potentiality. Now, you're right.
Right.
The Maple Leafs aren't a great team. They're a good team, and they've been a good team for a long time. A good team that flirts with the playoff spot most times don't make it.
No, I wouldn't.
It is the curse. It is the curse of being in the middle. Now, is there the potential for them to be a great team? I would argue not. When you look at the Dallas Stars and their organization and their organizational depth, do you say to yourself, with those young players and the ones that are on the horizon, do they have the potential to be a great team?
I think so you're saying great. Overall you'd rather be Dallas because there's a future.
Yes.
Right,
not right now.
Point.
But I'm not going minute by minute on this thing. I'm going like big picture. I'd rather be Dallas than Toronto.
No, but you hit the nail on the head, which is that everyone, and I know this is a product of the cup drought and the media echo chamber and all this other jive and the changes and the promises and all that other stuff that you got to deal with as a Leafs fan. I try to approach it mentally as a Jets fan, but I can't get there. This is an extraordinarily average team with a coach who's never really figured out how to coach in the new NHL. It's just going to be that way. And I see everybody like setting tire fires last night because they've lost to Buffalo and they got blown out by Nashville. But I know that those fires are going to be put out by next week when they win two games.
Oh, yeah?
And everyone's look at that. Detroit, then Toronto. Wow, they're back in a wild card spot. They're just an extraordinarily average team. But your bigger point is this, and I completely agree with it. There's nothing here that makes me think that this is going to be a team that climbs the ladder to a championship. It's not built for it. They have to they have to tear this thing apart. They really do. Like that's the thing. Like we talked about it earlier this season with the whole, you know, if fans keep showing up and paying the money, is there ever any reason for teams to take drastic measures? And the Leafs are that example for me. This team should be exploded.
I don't buy that.
They should put barrels of gasoline and strap dynamite to them and explode them. There is nothing about this team, not a single thing outside of maybe three or four players, that I think should be there on what could be a Leafs championship team. They are frighteningly average. They are unshakably average. The only way they're not going to be average is if you clean out the gutters of this team.
The problem is if you do that, if you as a fan you say that's it, we're not buying any more tickets, we're not buying any jerseys because we can't afford to keep throwing them on the ice every game. If you keep doing that, like if fans just stop doing that, then I would say management would rush into stupider decisions. Like, at least the one thing that they don't have to worry about is ticket sales. Okay, ticket sales, done. We don't have to worry about that. We can focus on the team. Sure, you have to worry about season ticket renewals and sponsorships and all that kind of stuff. But by and large, when you work in that area of the business for the Maple Leafs, your job is a mite bit easier than if you do the same for the Phoenix Coyotes.
Totally.
I would argue if fans revolt that way, management would be rushed into stupid decisions that look penny wise, but are pound foolish, and save you today. Damn, what happens in 5 years from now?
But the problem here is that they need drastic, and you're not going to get drastic as long as you're average. You get drastic when the bottom falls out, and you have to sell everybody off and rethink it. And,
so what's drastic?
And approach it a different
way. What's drastic?
Drastic is remaking 65% of this roster.
Okay, how do you do that in a salary cap universe, in one where the salary cap may not be going up that much next year? And no one's ready to take on money unless you're getting money back.
That's why they paid Mike Babcock the big bucks, by the way. the Babcock talk is at a fever pitch right now, but here's the thing, right?
Oh, because he would love to join this right now.
Because
he's
think
looking
Babcock,
at this going, oh, yeah, let me get in on this.
Oh, come on. I think he would. A creature of ego like Mike Babcock would want – they would build a fucking statue to this guy if he turned the franchise around.
He said about every coach or general manager has joined the organization.
Yeah, and also Rick Nash, but he chose not to go there.
Smart.
Probably a smart decision. I think this about Mike Babcock and the Leafs. I think this is a situation he could coach his way out of. I don't think this is a situation where he could be the guy for player personnel. You cannot allow – you can't – the temptation will be there to hand him the keys to the kingdom. But I say this. I evoke this name. I am holding up a cross right now like a priest does when he's trying to exorcise a demon and say the power of Christ compels you. I'm holding up a cross at Mike Babcock and the Maple Leafs, and I'm saying, Daniel Cleary, Daniel Cleary, Daniel Cleary. Over and over again until they understand that Mike Babcock cannot be given the reins for player personnel. Joining us down the line is a man that I would give the reins for anything, especially in my hockey league, because he knows how to run a really good one. He is Dave Andrews, president, CEO of the American Hockey League, and he joins us here on the show to talk about, well, not to put it too lightly, Merrick, but the thing that will save all of us from the scourge of the shootout. And that's the AHL's 3-on-3 overtime. Hey, Dave, thank you so much for coming back on the show. We obviously have had you on before. You're always a great guest. Let's get right to it. You guys had the boldness and the audacity to start up this overtime rethinking without the NHL being the catalyst. How do you feel it's worked out so far?
Well, it's worked out great. I think it's been even better than any of us anticipated. It's been really exciting for our fans, which I think is the most important thing. And then for those of us who are somewhat purists, it has really cut back on the number of games that have gone to a shootout. And you've probably seen the statistics, but I think at the end of last season, 65% of the games that went to overtime in the American Hockey League went to a shootout. And at this point during this year, we're below 20%. It's really been good. We've had, I think, 45 overtime games or somewhere in that range, with 9 of them going to a shootout. And about half of the games have been decided in the 4-on-4 and about half in the 3-on-3. So I've only actually seen one live, which was a game between Hershey and Hartford in a 3-on-3 overtime, and it was spectacular to watch. And speaking to NHL GMs who have been to our games and our own hockey people that have obviously experienced the 3-on-3, they think it's been great too. So not to say that it happened, you know, without some NHL input, because our competition committee, which came up with this formula in the summer and proposed it to our board, it has a lot of NHL assistant GMs on it. But I think they kind of wrestled with how to go about it, and what they came up with has been really good.
Dave, let me play devil's advocate with you here for a second, because you and I go back a long ways, and you don't mind a little bit of sparring. the term purist is always interesting to me, because, you know, the hockey rules, you know, were first codified in Montreal in 1876, and I don't think we're ready to go back then for looking at the game now. But when I see 3-on-3 versus the shootout, the first thing that strikes my mind, even though I love the way 3-on-3 looks and it's exciting and it's a cool brand of hockey, I think to myself, well, what do we see more in hockey? Do we see more penalty shots, or do we see more 3-on-3 play? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, that's a good question. You want us to use Neanderthal instead of purist.
Yeah, maybe. No, it's like I get the idea of trying to minimize what shootouts can do, because, you know, maybe too much of, you know, too much of that is too much for the game. But I don't know. It almost seems as if I'm not sure that going 3-on-3 mitigates the fact that it's still not quote unquote traditional hockey.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously right there, but I do think the difference is that it's perceived by our hockey people, at least, to still be part of the team game. It may not be something you see a lot in hockey, but it's more of a team game as opposed to sort of the one-on-one situation. My phone is beeping.
Sorry.
I apologize for that. No obviously, problem. You can't hear it. But it is really very exciting when you get players at with the skill level that you have in our league, and if at some point it happens in the NHL, when you see players with that skill level playing with that much open ice, it's really exciting to watch. And I think for most that I've talked to, they seem to like it better than the shootout, and you still end up at the shootout in the end if you don't get a decision. So it's resonated pretty well with our group.
And, you know, the sample size is small, but the hard numbers are pretty fascinating. You know, 9 shootouts so far. That's 20% of all overtime games. Last year, 64.7% of all overtime games went to a shootout. And the real interesting stat that I saw today, Dave, that I hadn't seen before, 15 overtime goals scored in the last 2 minutes of overtime in that 3-on-3. That's a pretty large number in comparison to the other times.
Yeah, it is. And I think part of that is that we don't always get to the 3-on-3 right away. As you know, the game doesn't stop very often anymore with whistles, and in overtime even more so. So when you're for us, we don't get to the 3-on-3 until the first whistle after 3 minutes have been played. And we have had games where there's been no whistle after the 3 minute mark. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we haven't looked at that data, or I certainly haven't, but looking at the number of minutes that actually get played 3-on-3 in these overtimes would be something interesting to look at as well, because I would doubt very much that we probably are playing 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes in lots of overtimes before we get to the 3-on-3.
Any feedback from the NHL? I mean, I would imagine that Gary Bettman's league is having a look at this and saying to themselves, well, if this really is working and if this really is something that fans love and we can still, you know, maintain, you know, this element that we can finalize a game in a shootout, I would imagine the NHL would more than raise an eyebrow at it. Any feedback from Gary Bettman?
Not directly with Gary, no. And we, I mean, I see Gary and speak with him from time to time, and Bill Daly more regularly, and Coley Campbell even more regularly. But, I mean, we haven't had any league-to-league conversation about it other than sort of informally. But I have been in touch with a number of NHL GMs over the last few weeks just on other matters, and they seem to really like the concept. And I think, you know, I think they'll look at it as the season wears on and look for a bigger sample size and see more games themselves to see what they think of it. And then it'll go wherever it goes. But, it wasn't done, as you mentioned right off the top, it wasn't done as a test for the NHL. It was something that our group wanted to do in our league. And I think so far it's been good.
Switching gears, I believe it's Monday. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but you're going to have a American Hockey League game in the Syracuse Carrier Dome, correct?
Yeah.
Actually, Saturday night.
Oh, Saturday night. I'm sorry. Got my dates wrong. Yes, Saturday night, Carrier Dome, the Syracuse Crunch hosting the Utica Comets. And you're gunning for the indoor record that was set by the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs that year against the Flyers.
I believe so, and I'm not on top of where the ticket sales are, although I am on this particular road trip I'm on planning to finish it Saturday night in Syracuse at the game, but I think they're hoping to get 30,000 to 35,000 people at the Carrier Dome for that game, which would be great. It's Howard Dolgan, who's our owner there in Syracuse, had the first outdoor game in the American Hockey League, and he's always looking for special events, and I think this one will be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to it.
Is this a pilot program to maybe do this in other cities, or is this unique to Syracuse, do you think?
No, these aren't really league events. I mean, they're our outdoor games have been the same way, other than our work with the NHL at their Winter Classic, where we've had games in Philadelphia and in Detroit. The outdoor games really have been, and these special event games are really driven by the teams themselves. So, we're always happy to see them and happy to support them and work with the teams to help make them successful. But we don't really have the human resources within our league to be driving a lot of special events beyond our all-star event. I was just going to say your meeting with Daniel Cleary was appropriate because I'm looking at St. John's Harbor right now. So the Newfoundland.
That'd be a nice
St. John's Harbor.
You know,
Dan Cleary these days.
You mentioned, of course, we're just talking about Syracuse for a second. And I know it's an older rink, but for me, I always love going there. And not just because of those three Slapshot fans that do that routine every game. But the On Center War Memorial Arena, to me, is one of the great rinks in North America. However, it could maybe use a lick of paint or maybe a sort of an upgrade. When you look around the American Hockey League landscape, how much time do you spend worrying about, or how much time do you spend thinking about ways to improve the actual rink versus keeping some like sort of great nostalgia like we have at the War Memorial in Syracuse?
Yeah, I think, well, I don't worry about the arenas themselves as much as I do about our markets and our geography, because that's becoming a real challenge for us. But that's another topic. But we're in a lot of, with 30 teams now, we're in a lot of newer buildings and great buildings. We're in some major league, we play in the same facilities as some of the NBA teams. And, we've got some terrific new facilities, or reasonably new, like the Giant Center in Hershey. And we've had a lot of renovations go on. When you look at Binghamton, for example, which is one of our older buildings and more, longstanding franchises in a very small market, their building has been completely renovated and is you wouldn't recognize it as the building it was before. Similarly in Rochester, the Blue Cross Arena in Rochester has been completely redone as well. So a lot of our older facilities have been updated, and a lot of our markets have relatively new and at the event level are almost identical to the National Hockey League. The dressing room space and fitness facilities and medical rooms and all of that are very close to the same as NHL team. So that's a dramatic change from when I first started in the American Hockey League. And, Syracuse, the buildings are where they sort of show their age more, I think, is at the event level. That you require a whole lot of work to be up to an American Hockey League standard there. And there's some work being done in Syracuse to upgrade the building as well. But it's a great place to watch a game. I mean, it's for fans. You're right on top of the action. And the only place that isn't as good to watch a game is the press box. That's a challenge in Syracuse, as you probably know, Jeff.
I banged my head there a couple times when I did Marley's games.
And when you and I bang our heads, you know, it's a low-ceiling press box.
It's a challenging one for broadcasters, you well know, Dave. You know, it's not as scary, though, as walking the catwalk at Cops Coliseum. That's the one that still frightens me to this day.
I'm with you on that. I'm one of those guys that still holds the handrail all the way over to the press box.
Yep, I'm with you, too. I'm the same way when I get up there. That's true.
Hey, last one for me, Dave, because you mentioned it, so we need to follow up on it. Where are things standing with the massive AHL Western expansion, realignment, whatever you want to call it, that's been rumored for the last couple of years?
Well, we've been at it for about 2 years in terms of discussions and looking at ways in which we, you know, in the process by which we might be able to relocate teams out west. And you know, we're faced now with almost every NHL team is really eager to have their AHL affiliate close to them for a lot of very, very, you know, legitimate reasons. I think from a player development point of view, they like to have their players closer so that their coaching staffs and scouts and management team can see them on a regular basis. I think there's a cap management issue for some of the teams. There's the whole recall issue of getting players out to the West Coast from the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And I think for the West Coast teams, they see some real marketing synergies as well with television and growing the game on the West Coast. So, you know, we've committed ourselves to work with them to help them make that happen. I would say we're getting closer all the time. I think we're all on the same page now about how it would happen and how it could unfold. The one thing we don't have is a critical path in terms of how soon it might take place, but it's a front burner issue, and you know, I think over time you're going to see a realignment of our league in a fairly significant way in order to enable teams to move further west. But it's not an easy task, as you can imagine. With I think moving the Dodgers and the Giants west when they did it, moving two teams was a huge deal. Like we're talking here about, you know, 4 to 5 to 6 to eventually probably 8 teams that would be relocated at some point.
And Dave, last one from this microphone, and you know, this isn't to disrespect any of the other franchises that you don't mention here, but in your mind, in your capacity as president and CEO of the American Hockey League, which are the two, three, four, however many you want to mention, that you would hold up and say, these are model franchises for our league? They hit so many, they allow you as a president to check off a lot of boxes at the end of the year.
Well, I think you always start with Hershey. I mean, Hershey has been a flagship franchise in our league for as long as any of us can remember, and so that's one that you would point to. I think we also now look at for a smaller market, we look at Cedar Park, Texas. The Texas Stars have been incredibly well run, have been successful both on and off the ice, and San Antonio has become a franchise that we take a lot of pride in, owned and operated by the Spurs, and they've gone from in a non-traditional market, certainly have really grown the game there and grown their fan base. And they're one of the groups that we would use to work with other teams to help them sort of grow their business as well. Lake Erie, again, an NBA-owned team in Cleveland, they've been terrific. And then we've got a team like Syracuse is another really good example. It's got great longevity in our league, who continue to succeed at the gate and continue to show that smaller market teams in our league with smaller buildings can make it work. So, there's lots of them. I think we're really lucky. Over the years, if you look at where we are now with ownership and the strength of the league, and you look at, you know, Grand Rapids would be another great example of a franchise that mm-hmm. came to us from the IHL that's really been successful in our league with good management, good ownership. So I feel very fortunate that we have, for the most part, pretty stable franchises with good operators and good ownership.
Look, Dave, I don't know what the qualifications are for winning the Nobel Peace Prize, but I know that 4.1% of all games in the AHL going to a shootout should darn well be part of that qualification process. Sir, you are indeed a good man for hockey, and we thank you for being on the show.
We'll put your name forward.
Appreciate being
Thanks,
on.
Dave. Dave Andrews, president. Yeah, you know, the only thing that I would take exception with, as you mentioned, Hershey being the model franchise.
Yeah.
I got a bone to pick with Hershey. You know what it is?
What's that?
Well, they have a mascot who is a bear, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Coco, the bear.
Right, Coco right? the bear.
So Coco's always been a very lovable mascot, wears a Hershey Bears jersey and a helmet. He's great fun for the kids, and the fans love him as well. Coco is a bear, and as many bears do, he has a very barely pot belly. Bears tend to not be chiseled. Now, they decided not that long ago that Coco the bear, the chubby bear, was going to have to get a little leaner, get a little healthier to promote a more healthy lifestyle for the kids.
In Hershey.
Thank you. The irony is not lost. So they've slimmed the mascot. This happened, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. They've slimmed him down and are promoting a more healthier diet with increased exercise. The mascot. A bear.
Yeah. Oh, hey, wait a second. Somebody wants to say something.
Why do they need a bear at all? Like, why do they have to have bears? It's the same reason I never go to parks, is because they may have a bear there. And obviously he has a big belly because he has eaten the child, which is why you don't have any bears anywhere. Why you have to have a bear? It's just hockey.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, evidently, he's not doing anything better, so we decided to hang out until we spoke about
thank
bears.
Thank you, unemployed goaltender. Thank you. Well, much appreciated for the cameo here on the podcast. Yeah, other than that, I'm totally down with the Hershey Bears, but come on, really? Did you need to do that with the mascot? Really? Do we need a good, lean, thinned-out bear? Right? Do we need a bear you can light matches off of? No! We want a bear with a gut. Chubby,
a big, fat,
lovable
bear. Yeah. Indeed. Right.
Yeah, that's why I want my mascots. Sorry.
One might say that Hershey's been a model franchise because George McPhee refused to trade any prospects for about 7 years. I mean, I'm just saying. That does help, doesn't it? When the cupboard is always full. Just, you know,
well,
and out there.
And they, didn't they, I mean, Chicago, the masters of this for so many years. I mean, Hershey would always... I mean, they weren't like the Wolves, but weren't they one of those teams that would always buy the high-priced free agents, the Eric Westrams of the world, Kirby Law?
Oh
these
no,
kind of
they
guys?
Definitely they had. Yeah, they would always have those guys who were AHL class players that they bring in, not as ringers. Yeah. I mean, it's not the right term, but definitely to help out, right?
Yeah, like so. Elite level American Hockey League guys that were probably too good for the AHL but couldn't play a top six in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Frustrating place to be, but I mean, make a lot of money doing it.
We're not going to play the sounder because we've got to kind of do going postal around this Dangle interview that's going to come up. But it is going postal day. It's a Wednesday, so I wanted to ask a few questions while we had a moment. Rachel Tapia writes in. Wait, what was that? Is Dangle there or no? Not yet? Okay. Anyways, Rachel writes in. Last week, we were all wondering if Hitchcock might be fired because if the Blues didn't turn it around. Well, do you think that if Hitch gets fired, that the Leafs might fire Carlisle and hire Hitch instead of waiting till the offseason to try and see if they can land Babcock? Oh, okay. That's what I thought you said. Real quick on that before we get to Dangle, I don't think they're going to make a move. Like, unless things go completely to shit, if they lose, you know, 7 in a row, then maybe they make a move. But I don't think they're making a move on either Carlisle or Notice until after the season, do you?
Remember what the final straw was for Ron Wilson? It was the chants.
Fans chanting.
And as we've seen, management, now we'll see what this management team is like, whether Shanahan reacts the same way that Brian Burke did, where he essentially said, all right, enough of this chanting, it's killing us. I'm just going to fire Ron Wilson and then take it out on the media. Until we start to hear the chants and more jerseys hitting the ice, I don't think they're going to make a move.
Phil Kessel, who, by the way, you should never interview because obviously he could tell you nothing that might make news, says that fans
throwing jerseys on
the ice is classless. That's why you interview star players, because sometimes you learn things from them and their feelings on things, and it makes it kind of interesting for all of us, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not so sure Phil should be talking about that right now.
Yeah, and by the way, if Leafs fans really wanted to make a statement, they'd all get together and have a jersey throw night. Because, by the way, you're Canadian, okay? You all have jerseys you don't need anymore. I'm just going to assume that.
Yeah, closets full of them.
Joining us now on the line is a man who might be able to organize such an event. He is the voice of the Leafs fan, no more so than last night when he lost his marbles during the waning moments of Toronto's 9-2 loss to Nashville. He's a friend of the program and a proud member of the Sportsnet family. He is Steve Dangle, and he joins us now. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hey, Steve, it's your therapist. I mean, your buddy, Jeff, here. Hey, buddy.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Now, I've heard much about it, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet. Having two sick kids in the house will do that. In like 30 seconds, you know, you be the concentrate to the jug of orange juice. In 30 seconds, give me a synopsis of the latest video.
Okay, what was it? Okay, it was basically, I would love to know what the blood pressure is of an average 26-year-old and put it up against mine, because there's no way it even competes. I'm a 53-year-old man inside my bloodstream. And then I was thinking, you know, I've been preaching all season long, the Leafs got to have patience. They got to have patience. I think Shanahan is going to do the smart thing. He's going to be very patient. And screw it, I hate this damn team. 1967, freaking 2004, I hate everything. That's basically it.
Also, he threw his phone.
Wow. Wow.
I threw my phone. I threw a chair. I kind of dinged the chair a little bit. My room is. I haven't cleaned it up yet. I can take a picture and tweet
Is that a Rogers issued phone, sir? I certainly hope not.
It's not yet. No.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's your own.
Listen, like to me saying yes, all cocky.
I liked the part where Mrs. Dangle tells Steve during the taping of his program that it's now 9 goals for Nashville.
Yeah, that was, and I was just rolling too. Like that wasn't me going, "Hey, honey, could you yell this down the stairs?"
Honey, Nashville scored 9. It's your turn to do the dishes.
Thank you. Thanks for that. I needed to know that because
all right,
nine is much worse than 8.
Let's put on our fire retardant suits and wade into this smoldering fire of a franchise. Nothing.
Okay.
Listen.
Okay.
What do you do now? I mean, like, are you somebody who believes that they should make a change at coach at this point, or is it pointless because this team is hopelessly average, and if you make a change now or at the end of the season, it really doesn't change the fortune of this team this season?
You ever have a friend that's really not good at flirting? I abstain from this conversation, sir.
I will just see myself out of this conversation
on the friend
who doesn't know how to flirt.
No. You ever have a friend who's like, what, is it that obvious? Yes, it's friggin' that obvious. Any smart team would have gotten rid of Carlisle by now, but they haven't, because why?
Because he was protected for a while, and because because Nonis knew for a really long time that Carlisle was, if this was a chess match, Carlisle was a pawn that could be taken and therefore save Nonis some time before his eventual demise.
Okay, that's actually a really good answer. I wasn't expecting. Damn it! I was going to say Mike Babcock, because all this reminds me of, and believe me, I would like to believe that Babcock is going to become the Leafs coach. I just don't think it's going to happen, because why would anything good ever happen to this team? But this reminds me a lot of when Brian Burke was still the GM of the Ducks, and it was just a foregone conclusion that he was going to be the next GM of the Leafs. Like, everyone knew. It was just, like, it's kind of amazing the Leafs didn't get dinged for tampering and all that. Mm. Maybe they should have. I don't know.
They didn't need to. They had everyone in the media running around saying, Brian Burke needs to be here.
The damn media, I always say. The damn media. I'm a broken man. I'm a broken man on Halifax Pier.
Let me ask you this. Randy Carlisle gets fired tomorrow.
Yes.
Are Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel better hockey players?
Slightly. Like I don't think it's the be-all, end-all of the Leafs' struggles. It definitely isn't. And I stayed up till like 3:34 last night, you know, DMing with people. Like, you know, people think it was just me losing my mind last night. A lot of people were just better at hiding it. You know, we were trying to figure out, how do you fix this team? You got to explore options with Dion. Phil Kessel's one of the best wingers in the league. You can't get rid of him, but maybe you get rid of a Joffrey loophole. How the hell do you get rid of that Clarkson contract? You know, what's Bozak's future? Do you explore avenues with James Van Riemsdyk? Do you? I mean,
so here. Let me give you this one. In a lot of ways, if you want to blame Randy Carlyle, and I'm not the biggest Randy Carlyle guy out there, but if you want to blame Randy Carlyle, do you not have to blame management for essentially emasculating the guy in the summer, taking away all of his assistants, so every player on that team knows that there is a bullet wait. The first bullet waiting to be shot is one at Randy.
Yeah.
Like everybody on that team knows it almost leads you to believe that this is from day one a very intensely political situation where, you know, the new management group could have come in led by Brendan Shanahan and just knocked all the chess pieces off the board. But if that happened, then he's responsible for everything. Right now, there's still some time if you're Brendan Shanahan, because there is a Randy Carlyle move to be made. There is a Dave Nonis move still to be made. Could have come in, just got rid of everybody. But instead, he said, no. We're going to let a couple of other guys hold the bag here and buy some time before the heat's on us. Agree or disagree?
No, I agree. But, I mean, the thing we're all missing here is Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel are really good hockey players.
They are.
So I wonder if that's maybe part of the plan. But the really confusing thing to me is everyone was telling me, you know what, it's a good idea that they kept Carlyle because it sends a message to the players. I like your explanation a lot more than that BS, because, okay, we're going to send a message by completely stripping this guy of everything ever. All his assistants, we know he's the first guy to go. He's there to collect a paycheck. You know, I'm sure he's trying, but what can he do? Like, it's almost like I'm not saying fire him because I think he's terrible or whatever. Fire him because you're going to. Like, this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I had a car once.
And, I'm tapping out of this conversation.
And the engine literally used to catch on fire. And then I found out that it was a problem with the oil cap. I fixed it, and it didn't catch on fire anymore, and I felt good about life. It was also an ugly teal, and then eventually it stopped backing up. And it was at the moment when it stopped backing up that I said to myself, you know, perhaps getting a different car would be a good idea. So I take you back to about 5 minutes ago during a rant, when you use the word fix. And I often wonder about the Leafs if fix is the right word. You fix something that's broken, right? Mm. But that's on the thought that it was once working. And I don't think that this team has worked in this current incarnation. So my theory earlier in the show was that you just need to get a new team. You need to change over at least 65% of this roster and figure out a way to do it and clear out the gutters and try something different. Because fix isn't the thing. You can't fix this team. It's just average. It's just there. It's like it's the beige of hockey. It's just there.
Wow. Wow. The Leafs are a brown pair of shoes with a black suit.
Yes, exactly right.
That's actually, you know, I'm not the biggest fashion guy, but that's kind of hip now, though, isn't it? Brown shoes and black suit.
Oh my god,
yeah,
brown shoes have made a huge comeback.
Hey, by the way,
on Mojo Radio like 10 years ago, and at the time it was relevant.
speaking of fashion, by the way, Merrick, we didn't talk about this. Nice of James Duthie to steal your hair the other night on the Hall of Fame.
How dare he?
And how dare he?
Was,
right?
I was pimping him out, saying he should be in the Hall of Fame. He's a great broadcaster, and he totally horks my look. Hey, if you're anyone other than George Strombolopoulos, you're stealing my look.
gotta love Strombo. Has Strombo been on the show yet?
Hell yeah, he's been on a bunch.
Oh yeah, oh, for
gee.
Sure.
Of course.
I gotta listen course, more. Dude. I'm a bad friend.
Now,
sorry.
Well, listen. I mean, Dangle, the ratings have peaks and valleys, and you know, they peak when you have Strombo on, and
here's the thing too. Like, it wasn't that long ago that everybody was in an orgasmic frenzy about the Maple Leafs beating the Boston Bruins 6-1.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? I mean,
I was there.
Hold your horses, sir.
Hold your horses. Are you saying that it's possible that Leafs fans and their hyperbolic friends in the media tend to overstate despair and overstate euphoria? Are you trying to tell us that? That's an amazing discovery.
Do you know how Fox News kind of sells crisis every single day to keep you in a state of fear as opposed to a state of being informed as to what's happening in your country and around the world?
Yeah.
That's kind of Maple Leafs media.
I think Leafs media being the Fox News of sports media beats the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Coronation Street of bad hockey teams.
I would love to see that Twilight Zone episode, though, when the Leafs are, like, on their third straight cup and what the Toronto media does. You can't tell me that's an eighth defenseman. He's not worthy of being an eighth defenseman.
They'll have no idea what to do.
What would ever happen there?
They'll have no idea what to do because they won't have the skill set to write that way. They won't have the skill set to write underneath the in the context of the Leafs actually being a successful team. But that's it. I mean, listen, Steve, you mentioned, you know, Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. Throw Noah Hannafin, Lawson Krause is in that conversation now for the Frontenacs. Like, there's a reward for being first. There's a reward for being last. There's no reward for being in the middle. And the problem with this team is they've just been a very mediocre team for too long. That's just it. And when you're – Greg and I talked about this before you came on. When you have a salary-capped universe, one where it doesn't look like the cap's going to go up much next season, it's tough to make any moves. You can say, like – and I agree with which. I think, you know, they've built around the wrong guys. They really do. Like, I don't think anyone around the NHL says, you know what, you build around Kessel and Phaneuf, you got yourself a Stanley Cup contender. No one's saying that. But it's hard to turn over 65% of your guys. What's easy to do is say, damn it, we won't stand for this. Fratton, you're on waivers. Gardner, you're scratched against Tampa.
Is that what they're doing with Gardner?
I don't know, but would it surprise you?
No.
Like, would it shock you for 1 second to say, well, you know what? We need to teach him a lesson. Well, good. So last year your whipping boy was Kadri. This year your whipping boy is Gardner. What have you done?
Gardner is that guy that he's from a group of friends that doesn't hang out with your biggest group of friends that you have to – whenever the groups of friends collide, you go, no, trust me, he's cool. Trust me, he's cool, man. Like, I really am getting on board with the analytics stuff, but that guy drives me nuts. That guy drives me up a wall, man. He's really making it hard for me to like him.
I know. Hey, listen, I know. I'm
it's
with
an
you.
it's an imminently unlikable team, and that's why Kessel transcends it. Like he at one point he was an unlikable player, but now he's extraordinarily likable because he's not like the rest of them. He actually does his job. He does it quite well. He's just miscast. He's the number two. He needs a Taves or a Bergeron or someone who can be captain material and handle the tough questions and just have him do his thing. He's basically an American Ovechkin, to be quite honest with you.
You know,
they're calling him Andy Richter, like the best guy.
No, you know what? Or actually, maybe giving him even more credit. There's a very famous Timothy Leary speech. You know, it says, like, admit it, you aren't like them. You're not even close. You may dress yourself up like them, watch the same mindless TV shows, maybe even eat the same fast food. But it seems the more you try to fit in, the more you feel like an outsider watching the normal people as they go about their automatic existences. Are you trying to put that forth about Phil Kessel? That he has almost become like a Timothy Leary-esque kind of person on the Maple Leafs locker room.
I think he's Dan Aykroyd, and he needs a Belushi. That's the issue. No one can make that. You know why Blues Brothers 2000 failed? Because Dan Aykroyd had to be Belushi. Of course, it's going to fail. He needs Belushi. He's just an Aykroyd, but he's a good Aykroyd. He's not Peter Aykroyd.
Well, he thinks that his Belushi is. You know who down
he's
the middle,
built like,
best buddy.
He's built like Belushi, but he's not Belushi. That's the issue. Listen, Dangle.
He thinks that Bozak is the guy.
By the way.
you really done a heck of a job, I think, capturing the essence of the Leafs fan experience last night this morning.
Hang on, no, you got to say it like Slapshot. Dangle, you really captured the spirit of the thing there.
Thanks, Dad.
I was trying to pay him a compliment. Dangle, I really
think you captured the spirit
of the Leafs fan experience last night. Oh, wait. I'm turning my hat sideways.
No, he didn't. That video was terrible.
Hey, you shut up. Don't say that about Steve Dangle.
I'm on the call. Listen, give me the phone. Hey, I'm tired of you doing impressions of me on your damn show. You need to cut it out.
just kind of had the sockish there a little bit. That was good.
Am I on? Who the hell has a landline these days? Shut up, I'm working on it. Anyway, shut up about me.
It's literally the only, it's the joke in the world that makes three people laugh harder than any other joke in the world.
Oh, God, I love it. Every time it happens, man, I fucking lose my shit.
All right, Dangle, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, and hopefully things get better for you and the Leafs.
Hey, Steve, let me offer you some advice for your sanity. There's an old saying, he who angers you controls you. Don't be controlled by the Maple Leafs, Steve. Don't be controlled by the Maple Leafs. Be your own person.
Jeff just told me to get Raptors tickets.
They're red hot. Hey, man, the field is open. They just got a couple of blocks, and now the field just opened up for the Raptors in Toronto.
And you, sir, would be the first bandwagon Raptors fan in Toronto. Congratulations.
That's awesome.
All right, Dangle.
White guy from the suburbs jumps on the Raptors bandwagon. Wow, that's a new story.
Strangest thing.
The Raptors bandwagon, otherwise known as the GO train.
All right, get out of here.
Thanks, buddy.
Dangle, ladies and gentlemen. Question from Pete Judge. Are the Islanders the best team in the East after Pittsburgh and Montreal? Well, the Islanders are 24 points, Montreal 29. Pittsburgh 27. I still put the Lightning over the Islanders, to be quite honest with you. If you asked me, if you pressed me, I would still put the Lightning over the Islanders, mainly because of the number 73, which is a hell of a number to have offensively right now. Goals for the season for Tampa Bay. I still think it's probably at this moment, Montreal, Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh. Are the Islanders better than Boston? In this incarnation of Boston, I would say the Islanders are better than them at this point.
Let's wait for the Boston Bruins to get healthy. Let me ask you a question about Tampa. Do you know, I don't have their schedule up here in front of me. Who you mentioned they scored 73 goals so far this year. Do you know who they're playing next? Any idea?
They're playing.
I don't know. I just want to have a look at the Leafs, I believe.
Oh, look at that. Oh, yeah. There it is.
Things are about
73? I'm at 105.
Things are about to get better in Toronto, apparently.
Tampa Bay. By the way, on the opposite end of the spectrum, I was talking to Boomer on XM about this morning.
Yeah.
Devils with 47 goals in 19 games. That's unbelievably bad offensively.
Yeah,
unbelievably
they don't score
bad.
Goals.
For the number
of
players they have on that roster that should be able to score goals. It's terrible.
Yeah, but they're all like 50.
They are. But this is the part of the season they should be good. This is the early part. Can you imagine when it's later in the season?
Oof. Their
bones are all aching and all they want to do is sit back and watch Matlock?
Imagine what happens if they get filled up at Christmas.
Brad Hewton writes in, skaters don't... me and Ruby have already talked about doing a juice cleanse after Thanksgiving because
already?
We're just wary.
Here's some advice to you. Do one before and after. Just do like a 3 day before and then do a 5 day after.
And then just eat 7 tons of food while watching the Bears on Thanksgiving.
Well, you're gonna do it anyway.
Right.
Just try to give yourself a nice little sort of healthy buffer before and after.
I've actually been in better shape since I moved to New York. Obviously, I've been working out more and there's more walking overall in New York, but. Last week I did something that I don't remember the last time I actually did it. And I didn't even know it was possible. I actually overate sushi, and it wasn't all you can eat sushi. It was just the sushi I ordered.
Wow.
I know. I ordered something called a jumbo lobster roll. That Ruby was like, it's probably meant for more than one person. I'm like, I don't know. It sounds like something I could tackle. I ate the whole thing and I'm just like, wow.
But it doesn't surprise me now that you've moved to New York that you're in better shape. I mean, what you're talking about is getting more casual exercise. Like, that's why a country like Sweden has all of us licked, because they have a culture of casual exercise. Hey, I got to go to the store. I'm going to walk there. Hey, right. I'm going to go to so-and-so. Oh, I'm going to run there and then run back. Tell me the last time anyone saw a fat Swede. I'll wait.
Also, the other issue also is that when you're in New York, you realize that the only fat people are cops, longshoremen, and guys over 60. So you realize quickly that if you're going to fit in here, you need to get your ass in shape, because otherwise it's just like...
There's not a lot of room.
Brad writes in, skaters don't get a minus for goals while killing penalties, but it counts against a goalie's save percentage. I guess now that people are looking at even straight save percentage, it isn't a big deal, but it's always annoyed me, and I'm not even a goalie. I guess that's not a question. Are there any other statistical oddities that you can think of that grate on you?
You know what grates on me?
Oddities. Go ahead.
There's one. There's a couple. One that I don't know, for whatever reason, for the last year, this one's sort of always bugged me. How come goalies are the only ones who get wins and losses? Like, we talk about how many times a player has won the Stanley Cup.
This is a classic.
Has won the
here,
Stanley
yeah.
Cup. Why don't we say how many games that player? Goalies always get pinned with it. Why not players?
Yeah.
If we're going to say, hey, he's so great because he won a couple of Stanley Cups, well, what about his regular seasons? How many winning games was he part of?
Right. Oh, and I would love if you could break it down to how many games did they win when he scored and how many games did he lose when he scored. You could do that on some split stat sites. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm of two minds on this because I don't like the idea of this stat being devalued because I think that it is an important part of a scoring play, depending on how the scoring play occurs. But I would love to see a statistical breakdown on NHL.com of primary and secondary assists. If it's there, and I didn't see it, I apologize, but it's not a readily regurgitated stat for guys that have a ton of assists. Secondary assists, primary assists. Let me see if it's here. Assists. Let's see if they break it down by primary and secondary. No, they don't. I would like to see primary and secondary assists broken down. That's what kind of my pet peeve with stats. But again, I don't want to devalue a secondary assist on a play. Like a breakout pass from a defenseman to a forward who then passes to another forward, well, that defenseman probably sparked the play. I just would like to see what the breakdown is. That's all.
The other one for me, which I've mentioned countless times, and I apologize to you specifically, Tally Duchesne, who calls me on all these things, but empty net goals. I saw that empty net goals are a great stat that isn't calculated, not because, oh wow, he put the puck in an empty net, wow, what skill, my four-year-old can do that, but to be in position to score an empty net goal says a lot about you as a player. You are defending a lead, generally a one-goal lead, late in the game, the coach says, I want you out there. Brett Hull would always brag about not scoring empty net goals. That's right, Brett, you know why? You're not going out there protecting a one-goal lead.
I'll tell you why. What turned me around on empty net goals was Ovechkin. Ovechkin has probably more empty netters in the last 10 years than anybody. And for a while, he was sort of mocked for it. It was like, oh, you're cherry picking. You know, these are the easy ones. You know, no wonder your goal total is so high with all these empty netters.
No, man.
And then you dialed it back and thought, okay, but this is a guy whose defense is maligned at every turn, yet he's put in that position to score. Maybe it's because the coach knows inherently that this guy could end the game if he puts that puck in the empty net. So that really turned me around. Because I was one of those people, too. I was like, oh, you're padding your stats by being out there and getting an easy goal. But no, it's the guy who's out there whose job it is to put the final nail in the coffin. And you're right. It's a completely misunderstood ability and skill in the game. Finally, Paul Bedina writes in, what do you guys think about the two guys people blame on the Sharks when it comes to the Hockey Hall of Fame? Joe Thornton could be a shoe-in or should be a shoe-in because just look at what who he's about to pass, and he's still productive. Marlowe, at least to me, can only be in the Hall of Fame if he wins a cup. A Conn Smythe will probably get 500 this year, maybe even 600 in his career. Thanks, Jens, Random Penguin, Pascal Dupuis. Best wishes to him.
Yes.
Thornton's a Hall of Famer in a millisecond. If Adam Oates is in the Hall, Thornton's in the Hall.
Here's why I put Joe Thornton in the class of, again, his career's not done yet, but speculation is pretty strong. He's not going to win a Stanley Cup. I'd put him in that class with the Marcel Dions and the Gilbert Perreaux.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Perreaux got there the one time. You know, Dion played on a team that had the Triple Crown line, and pretty much that was it. But they were great players and deserve being in the Hall of Fame regardless of whether they won Stanley Cups or not. So that's why I'm putting Thornton in there.
Right, no matter what the metric is, because one of the most popular ones was, you know, were you ever the best at your position? Were you ever top five in your position for a long period of time? And I think Thornton, in both cases, you could say that he was.
And you can make the case.
If not best, right there with Sid at one point in his career.
Yeah, and you can make the case he's still the best passer in the NHL.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Marlowe is a tougher sell. The tougher sell. He'll have the numbers, but does he rise to that level of elite without winning?
I'd have to have a much longer think on that, but my gut says no.
Yeah, tougher call on that one. It's a good question, though. You know, someone the other day said Hall of Fame debates are tedious. I disagree, though. I think Hall of Fame debates are always always really interesting. Really interesting. Real quick, I just want to read this from
Well,
Tony.
Then hang on. Yeah. Then you think can I make my yearly case again for Lauren Chabot? Then, if you think they're so interesting.
Not that one. I made the case on Rogi Bichon earlier. this week.
Oh, good.
Real quick, Tony C., this is about my story about P.K. Subban on the cover of the Canadian SI. Interesting article about the cover story in American fans. I'm a Canadian fan who will give any player their due when they really deserve. But other than Montreal fans, who really cares about a hot dog named Subban? Someone has to help me to appreciate the highest paid defenseman in the NHL that finished last season with a minus in the plus minus category. But you, as a writer, could very well be in Montreal. I don't know. Anyway, when I see him with mustard and ketchup on top, then I will probably be impressed. Listen. Like, I got into a fight with a Sports Illustrated editor on Twitter over the last 24 hours. He decided to continue it today for some reason. Look,
oh, good.
My point stands. Canadians don't quite understand the plight that we have in the States, and when it comes to coverage in the NHL. When we see a glorious P.K. Subban cover and a Michael Farber cover story on a Canadian Sports Illustrated issue, we wish that it was here, and we wish it was here because then we'd know to pick it up. But it goes beyond that. Like, there are certain things in this country that carry resonance for casual fans.
You know what?
And
angle?
One of them is the cover of SI. And, like, yeah. when someone else, when businessman X walks past his newsstand and sees P.K. Subban in a Canadiens jersey on the cover of Sports Illustrated, he'll say, wow, this is something I should really pay attention to, because this publication that I know and love and that is my barometer for what is important in sports is telling me this thing is important. And that's a very, very important and valuable thing for hockey in the U.S.
You want to go at him another way? If you're going to continue this argument with the SI editor,
I don't care anymore. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, if you choose to get back into it, if you choose to reengage Greg Wyshynski, go the pride of ownership route and ask him point blank, which piece are you more proud of, and which piece has better writing, the Farber piece or the football piece?
Well, he's already told me that the Farber piece is awesome, and he's made it explicitly clear that hockey fans should be happy that 8 of the 68 pages in the magazine have been dedicated to hockey, because that doesn't sound like charity work.
Anything on the cover that would indicate that you can come inside and find this marvelous piece of writing?
It's a stupid argument. He knows he can't win, and it really wasted a chunk of my time. But again, like we've talked about very oftentimes on the show, I have a lot of defects in life, and one of them is arguing on the internet. And so I apologize to anybody in my feed that had to get mixed up in that nonsense. But I'm sorry. It's like you're proud of the piece. You claim you think it's not about PK not being sellable to Americans. You claim that you have a bunch of hockey backers within the management and the editorial group at Sports Illustrated. Prove it. I mean, like, you can't find room for that story on your cover. Prove it. Sorry you had to make room for Alabama and Auburn or look back or the Cy Young Award. Prove it. Do something for hockey. There's an idea. Do something for hockey in a very public and easily witnessed manner, other than digging through your issue to find the story. Do something for hockey. It's pretty simple. And listen, if we want to go back and count covers for the last 20 years, number of times hockey's been in the cover, and it hasn't been some regional edition that you're trying to sell to fans of Chicago or Boston, let's do that. You tell me. I'll tell you this. There have been more shootouts in the AHL this year than there have been hockey covers in Sports Illustrated for the last 20 years that weren't regional. All right?
I know. Hey, man, you're preaching the choir here. I listen, we all know why it's done. It's whatever can get us the most eyeballs and whatever can get us. It's such a dying industry. It's so hard. I get it. These are tough decisions these people make, regardless of quality of article and doing the good work that hockey needs. These guys just care about selling magazines and saving their jobs, saving everyone's jobs.
Right.
It's a tough spot.
Right. They're probably right at the end of the day. He's just edgy about that kind of thing, I suppose. Anyways, thanks to Dave Andrews. Thanks to Steve Dangle. Now listen to me. You've had a really, really crazy week with illness in your family and having to be a good dad. Did you get time to do the hobo questions or not?
No, not yet. What day is today? Wednesday. No, I haven't. I thought you were off on Friday, though, anyway.
I am, but I thought about moving it to Thursday.
Oh, you goof. Because when you text me that, I'm like, okay, well, we'll push it for another week then.
Do you want to push it down to Thanksgiving week? Do it maybe that Tuesday?
We already had Thanksgiving.
That's my forehead.
Let's figure out a day, you and me. Let's text me later on today. I gotta go and I gotta conference call.
Tomorrow you don't have time to do the hobo questions.
Probably not. I got Colorado-Washington game tomorrow night, the national game. And then I got Kelowna-Portland on Friday. WSCHL.
So I'll email our victim and let her know that we'll reschedule.
Tell her I'm scared. Tell her I'm scared.
Well, she probably she listens to the show. She probably heard you say that.
I'm scared. Young lady that Greg met in New York City at some bar.
At an appearance, at a panel discussion. How dare you?
Oh, sorry. What was it? What did you meet her?
At the thing I did about the Bougard book. And then previous to that, the thing, the panel that I was on.
Wasn't it at a bar?
It was at a bar.
Well, there you go. So I was right. It was at a bar. I'm not saying it was like the opening scene of Barfly or something. Like, you just met her just at this event and happened to be at a bar.
Finally, good times for the Boston Bruins. Adam McQuaid out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken thumb.
Yeah, because that back end can use another injury. Here's the thing. Here's the lesson of this year. Don't trade your defenseman. No matter what, do not trade your defenseman. Every single general manager out there, learn the lesson of the Boston Bruins. Don't trade defenseman. Might be tempting. Might need cap relief. Trade a forward. Don't trade a defenseman.
Finally, Bruce Daubigan with the tweet of the show so far. Not to us, but in general. All right,
what's
if you want to see what leadership can do, look at Calgary and Giordano. Absence of leadership, look at FNUF, Kessel in Toronto. Unfixable.
Yeah. Oof. I know, but there is a lot to be said for the guy that goes out there, the leader that goes out there and leads by example and does it. Mm-hmm. And Giordano is bringing it and has for the past few years.
Yep.
Him and Brody may be the best combo in the NHL today.
Yeah.
And that trickles down everywhere through that lineup.
That's right. I don't know. I think the Leafs could probably still make the playoffs. Turns my hat sideways.
No, I can't. Fire everybody. Get rid of everybody in Toronto. Set the arena on fire.
Hey, that's not fair.
You need to go listen to the Commodores, man.
And you need to go watch Dangle's video.
I do, too. I'm going to do that tonight.
Amazing.
Yes, I am going to do that. I promise, Steve.
Right.
I promise, Steve.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And we've added a few more minutes to the show to make up for the mess we didn't give you earlier in the week. Anyways.
Are we contracted for minutes now?
Yeah,
we kind of chimped them the last couple of days.
We're
going to give them an extra 12
for advertisers. Hey, by the way, AHL Hall of Fame. AHL Hall of Fame, 10th group of enshrinees. Frederick.
Oh, who got in? Frederick Kasivi. Yeah.
Right, the goalie. Right.
Yeah.
James C. Hedney, Bronco Horvath.
Bronco Horvath. Oh,
Art
God, he
Stratton.
Like a Bronco. I thought Bronco Horvath would have already been in. Okay.
He was a gifted offensive player over his 20-year professional career, starring in both the AHL and the NHL.
He was, too. That's great.
Art Stratton made his pro debut with the AHL's Cleveland Barons in 1955, as you know.
Yeah, he would have played with Johnny Bauer. That powerhouse team. That team actually was competitive enough to be, like, if they would have been in the NHL at that time, they wouldn't have been like at the bottom of the barrel with Chicago. They would have been a competitive NHL team.
That's pretty crazy that we just had the discussion about Hershey and Kasivi makes the Hall of Fame. He was he backstopped them to the Calder Cup Finals.
You say Calder Cup like you say Stanley Cup. I just realized that.
Yeah, but you know
it's
what?
Calder Cup.
You never talk shit about
it's
that again.
Calder Cup.
One of your heroes in life says it the same way, Keith Olbermann.
Ah, crap! I want to talk about that piece too. We didn't do it today. We'll do it tomorrow.
All right, we'll do it tomorrow. We had enough health craziness on the show with Dupuis. Best wishes to Dupuis, but again, terrible news. And we will talk about that again and when we get it. And we'll talk tomorrow. Strong finish, Wyszynski.
You don't even know what you're saying. It's just like sounds are coming out of that hole in your face. That's all that's happening. And now the music stopped. Maddie's gone home. Yeah, we're going to try to hit the post like an FM DJ. Freebird! Here we go. No.
And we'll tell you more after the break that goes on for 24 hours until the show starts again. Bye.